Today we ask whether a book really does have to be dedicated to the one you love, as we discuss the art of the literary acknowledgement. And Mary Gateskill shares the novel she'd never lend. But we start in Ireland, a place steeped in rich literary history. In 2016, Granter published a collection looking at the very best of contemporary Irish writing. It included established names like Colm Tobin and Kevin Barry, and younger voices like Sarah Baum, Stephen Sexton and Sally Rooney. Since then, we've had the Brexit referendum in the north, and the south of Ireland has legalised same-sex marriage and abortion. So how have writers responded to these shifting tides? Well, I'm delighted that two of the most exciting contributors from the Granter collection join me now. Belfast-born Lucy Caldwell is the author of three novels, two short story collections, and was the editor of Being Various, Faber's anthology of new Irish short stories. Her latest solo collection, Intimacies, charts women's lives as they navigate love, motherhood and exile. Lisa McInerney's new novel, Rules of Revelation, is the final part of her Cork trilogy. Her riotous dialogue and working class characters led the Irish Times to call her arguably the most talented writer at work in Ireland today. Lisa McInerney and Lucy Caldwell join me now. Welcome to Open Book.
Thank you.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
I'd like to start by asking each of you, do you think of yourselves as specifically Irish writers? And if so, how exactly? Can I start with you, Lisa?
Oh, God. I love the idea of calling myself an Irish writer because I guess the... As you were just talking about there, Irish literary history being so rich and so important, and we're all so steeped in it, the idea of kind of belonging to this amazing school would be quite exciting, really. The other thing, too, is I would find it very hard to write without being interested in ideas of identity or ideas of setting in place. So I think on that basis, I would always be an Irish writer. I would always feel like an Irish writer when I'm working.
Lucy, what about you?
I consider myself a Northern Irish writer, I think. I consider myself a Belfast writer, despite the fact that I'm talking to you from London, despite the fact that I've lived in London as many years as I ever lived in Belfast. That's something that I tried to come to terms with in this current new collection. So identity, it's a little bit more complicated, but yes, Irish, certainly. North of Ireland, Irish, I think.
You mentioned your new collection, Intimacies, there. How much is it a companion piece to your earlier collection, Multitudes, which was published in 2016?
It's very much a sister volume to Multitudes. The stories of Multitudes, that collection took such a long time to write. It took a long time for me to have the confidence, even though I was publishing other things, to write those stories. And when I finally did, there were 11 stories, all narrated from the point of view of girls and young women, all set in Belfast or between Belfast and London. And so Intimacies is very much a sort of older sister volume, and it's women at a slightly later stage in life.
Is it the same women?
Well, with both collections, I didn't give any of the characters names. Mostly I wanted the idea that each could be a sort of cubist portrait of girlhood, of young womanhood, that even though superficial details change in the stories, you know, how many siblings someone has or whether they have children or don't or whether they want children or don't, it could almost be the same person.
A cubist portrait, I love that. And Lisa, I feel you're more like a Jackson Pollock. And you've been tracking your characters too, haven't you? Because the first novel in this trilogy, The Glorious Heresies, won the 2016 Women's Prize for Fiction. When we meet them again in Rules of Revelation, what's the journey been like for them over the last 5 years?
So not only has the journey been, you know, very personal for the characters, they've gone through their own kind of changes, things have happened in their lives, but also Ireland has changed just so massively in that very short period of time. We've had those two referendums that you mentioned earlier. We've had this kind of what feels like a sea change in attitudes and what feels like a change in how Irish people feel ownership of their country or feel like some power to be able to change things and to be able to kind of form the country in the way that they feel is most appropriate.
And like they might come back, I guess, as well, like Ryan.
Yeah, so Ryan is I guess, the heart of all three novels. We meet him in The Glorious Heresies, he's 15, and by the time we're meeting him again now in The Rules of Revelation, he's just turned 24, and he's been away in the gap between The Blood Miracles and The Rules of Revelation. He's kind of travelled around, and he's done that very Irish thing, you know, he's emigrated.
As you say, Ireland has evolved alongside your characters, so let's hear a short passage now from Rules of Revelation.
To be Irish was to be certain that things were going Ireland's way at last, and certain that there wasn't a hope in hell with Ireland's luck. To be Irish was to be resentful, flippant, European, nationalistic, demented. The island of saints and scholars, and not a saint left among them. People writing books and shooting films and doing pop-up gigs in town squares. People recording themselves performing poetry on the Atlantic shore, sneering out at Canada. What could you do except keep trying to tell the story of it? To be young and gifted and damp.
I love that. The weather, whatever else changes, the chances of rain are always high. And I have to say, I say that with love because I did grow up in Northern Ireland myself. And it was a place where language carried a great deal of weight. Even the place that I lived, Derry, had a contentious name because calling it Londonderry, especially with my English accent, would be seen in certain quarters to be making a political point. And Lucy, if I could come to you on that, how much does that sense of the impact of language make its way into your fiction, do you think?
I think it's there with every sentence. In one of the stories in Multitudes, I have a teacher talk to pupils about, she uses the image of a ladder of the strength of words, you know, from being able to say someone is murdered to someone is killed to someone has passed away. You know, the level at which you take responsibility or abnegate responsibility. So I think it's there right down to the way that we use verbs. It's one of the reasons for me that all writing, even when you're writing something very, very personal, is always political.
I feel like you can only fully understand Northern Ireland if you're from there. Let's hear a passage which deals with just this.
He'd never been to Belfast, not properly at least. He'd flown in to do the Game of Thrones tour on a mate stag do, and it had rained. He told me that, rolling his eyes and laughing. And though I'd usually be the first to criticise the place, how provincial it could be, how I couldn't wait to get away, I'd felt it like a punch to the gut. Belfast didn't feel like mine exactly anymore. Now I'd been gone so many years, I couldn't have told you where the best bars were, and the bus routes had all changed, but it still felt like a part of me. And how badly I wanted him then, not in an abstract sense or in some nebulous future, but right there beside me. Corn market, Christmas Eve. I wanted him to see the city, to walk its streets with me. And I thought, I have to tell you this.
Lucy, you now live in London, away from home. Does that give your characters and your writing a bit more freedom, do you think?
I think a lot of Irish writers have found that they've needed to leave Ireland in order to write more clear-sightedly about it. Intimacies is dedicated in part to all of the London Northern Irish and the people who haven't felt fully entitled to be Irish or to be Northern Irish because they've left. You know, Ireland is a place that has so long had the idea of itself as a place from which people emigrate. But recently, one of the big changes has been immigrants, people who are choosing to come to Ireland. That was something Lisa is tracking this brilliantly in her books. And as well, when I was editing Being Various, I really wanted to have represented strongly the voices of writers who have come to Ireland from elsewhere.
Lisa, until quite recently, I agree with Lucy that a lot of Irish writers dealt with the idea of leaving. I'm thinking particularly of Colm Tobin's Brooklyn, and to a certain extent, I guess the work of Anne Enright or even Naoise Dolan. But it feels, reading your work, Lisa, that more people are writing now about staying. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's a funny one because I think there is an unspoken element of class to this as well. So, I mean, almost the idea, I think, of emigration in Ireland has changed as to something that was financially necessary if you know, the people at home weren't to starve, up to a more cosmopolitan idea of people going away to kind of experience the world and maybe bring home the best of it back. But certainly, I wonder, do you need that little bit of distance almost to kind of reflect carefully on Irishness? Can you kind of write about it when you're steeped in it? And I've never left, but what I have done is, I've written all my books are set in Cork. I have gone the enormous distance of 100 miles up to County Galway to write them. And believe it or not, even that kind of very minor break has helped, because all of the idiosyncrasies of language, all of the kind of, I suppose, the beautiful details of setting in place just become more pronounced when you're away from them. You need to kind of miss things a little bit, I think, to reflect on them, at least with any level of love.
You're both born in 1981, the year of the hunger strikes, and you came of age around the time that the 1998 Good Friday Agreement was signed. It's an exciting time to chronicle, but has your writing had to emerge from the shadow of politics to make itself heard in a different way? Lucy, can I come to you first?
It was a strange thing. I think that what the Good Friday Agreement did, the genius of it, is it allowed for the first time a sense of both and rather than either or in terms of identity. I had grown up with plurality anyway because I have one parent who was raised in a Protestant tradition and one in a Catholic tradition, neither of whom practiced religion after they had children. But even the sense that you would see Belfast in terms of those binaries, people would always talk about the two communities. And you think that binary doesn't allow for, say, the LGBTQI plus community. Mm. It doesn't allow for the Polish community. It doesn't allow for a writer I'm mentoring at the moment is Muslim, has lived in Belfast since she was two, has children in Belfast. And you know, where is the story of a Belfast Eid? That's what I'd love to read. And so I think what the Good Friday Agreement did for my generation is it just gave you that bit of breathing space. People often talk about post-Troubles writing, and I'm increasingly wary of that. And also, I'm always wary of disregarding writers who were still writing regardless. I discovered a writer recently called Mary Beckett, who's amazing. She's very plain, very direct, but Chekhovian. Her works are astonishing. You can buy them for pence online. She's out of print. And she was mother of four, who wrote two collections of short stories and one novel all through the second half of the 20th century. And in all my years reading and all my years writing, I only discovered her through one of her stories being published in one of Sinead Gleeson's anthologies recently. So I think there are still all these writers who exist, and part of the work is to rediscover them, shine a spotlight on them, make sure that their work is honoured as well.
Lisa, obviously you come from a slightly different perspective on this because you are a writer from the south of Ireland.
Yes, as Lucy was talking there about post-Troubles literature and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't have had as big a presence of that in the Republic. I guess in a way we had something similar with Catholicism and kind of the very heavy involvement of the Catholic Church in the Irish state. But I don't really know if you can characterise that as post, whether things could be post-Troubles, post-Catholic, post-Recession Ireland, because you're always so formed by history. You always come from that context. So I think even when books, stories take place beyond that, you're still reflecting on it, maybe even in an indirect way. We are our history, you know?
And Lisa, even though you're embedded in that context, how important was it for you to reflect and explore the rise of secularisation?
I mean, it wasn't like it was important in that I sat down and said I must track these massive changes. It's just how contemporary Ireland is. And therefore, if you're writing a contemporary Irish story, you do kind of find yourself engaging with these topics and kind of playing around with them. You know, and so it's very fertile ground for writing stories, let me tell you.
Now, it's been a week where it feels like everyone in publishing has been desperate to get their sweaty mitts on Sally Rooney's proof of her new novel. It's almost impossible to have a discussion about Irish writing nowadays without mentioning Sally Rooney. And I just wonder what you think the impact of her astonishing success has been for other Irish writers. Lucy, what do you think?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to read a very early... I haven't yet had the new proof.
What?
But I did have a very early proof of Conversations with Friends. And I thought it was brilliant. And you could tell then it felt so fresh. It felt so modern. It felt very contemporary. You think of that classic old postcard, you know, of Irish writers, that even the last festival I was at in Galway, just before lockdown, it was still for sale, you know, outside the main festival bookshop. And it's the one, you know, you've got... Everyone you'd imagine, you've got Joyce and Beckett and you've got all of the great Irish males. And you look at that and you think, the women have never been on that, you know. And the Edna O'Brien and the Mary Lavin and the Kate O'Brien and Anne Enright, the Nora Holt, the Maeve Brennan, all the rest of it. One of the things that Sally Rooney's work has done is show what an appetite there is for books and for literature that take young women's romantic and political struggle seriously.
We need Mary Beckett as well as Samuel Beckett, don't we? Thank you so, so much to Lucy Caldwell and Lisa McInerney.